one of the things that we can't stress enough is if you're leaving, if you're coming in, you need to have the conversation before you leave or before you come in.
Yeah.
So you know what to do, because it can be so difficult to explain to people. If you've only spoken to us 6 months ago, we could have told you not to do X, Y, Z, and that would have saved you a lot of tax.
Welcome to the Tax Compass podcast, navigating UK tax for expats with LSR partners.
Welcome back to the Tax Compass podcast with us LSR partners, with me, Simon Rue, and my business partner and potential mastermind champion, Laura Tham.
Hi.
Why do I mention mastermind? We're going to take a dangerous trip into the statutory residence test. It's my job to make sure we don't disappear off down too many rabbit warrens. This is the area that Laura would have as a specialist subject if she were on Mastermind. I'm not sure that it would be gripping viewing, but with Clive Murray asking the questions, who knows? So the statutory residence test, Laura, in five or fewer words, no, seriously, give us a very high-level overview of why it's important. I want to try and keep this about why people need to think about it rather than getting into the minutiae. I think as we've, in all seriousness, we spend more time on this than anything else because we are sort of specialists in terms of residency.
Yes.
But I think it's a good one to start with, like, why does it matter? Why do I care whether I'm resident? Why does it matter if I'm just going off somewhere else? Why does it matter? When I left, I went off in 2011. This didn't exist then. Yep. I was still fine. I got taxed in Japan, not in the UK.
Yeah.
Why does it matter?
So I suppose the starting point in terms of why residence matters is that if you're a UK tax resident, the starting point is you're taxable in the UK on your worldwide income and gains. If you're a UK tax non-resident, you're subject to tax only in the UK on UK sources of income to an extent gains.
And that's really helpful. And first sort of key point there, it's that worldwide thing. People know about domicile, which is now gone, and there's new regimes and all the rest of it. But we often get people come to us, don't we, saying, oh, I've got a letter from HMRC, because I never thought.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's global.
Yeah, I was going to say there's a lot of misunderstanding when it comes to that, especially from people who are coming into the UK who know they're UK tax resident but think they're paying tax in another country, therefore they don't need to report that.
And that's often the thing, isn't it? For the layman, it's like, well, I'm paying tax on my rental income in Australia where I've got a house. Why would I be paying it in the UK as well?
Yeah, especially when it comes to rental. Sorry, we are going down a little tangential side path, but when it comes to rental income, quite often they'll go, oh, but I'm not actually making any cash because I'm paying off my mortgage, and the way that other countries might allow things like depreciation or something to offset against rental income we don't allow in the UK. So, yes, it is worldwide income and gains.
And so that's important in terms of, when people are being internationally mobile, they have to think about all of those aspects. So coming to the statutory residence test, it was introduced in 2013.
It was April 2013. It came into play.
I think our view is that it was part of trying to make things much more black and white. And one of the reasons why I was sort of joking at the start about it being law a specialist subject, it really is law a specialist subject. So it's also very detailed. But one of the reasons why we're not going to, well, there are two reasons we're not going to go into the minutiae. One is because I will be bored to tears and I might just have to quietly down the pub or something leave Laura talking. The other thing is that every single person's situation is different.
Yeah.
It's so detail focused.
Yeah.
I would be worried about going into too much detail because people might look at the detail, think they know how it will impact them. And what we don't want to do is send people off with the wrong impression or whatever it might be. So and obviously the self-interest here too, because it's our business. So we want people to get in touch with us. So do come and speak to us about the statutory residence test. But equally, it would be irresponsible of us to do too much because otherwise it's something where people could make costly mistakes. And we've seen that, right?
Yes, most definitely. And the big thing with the statutory residence test, as you said, it's very black and white. Once you've spent that day too long in the UK, there's nothing that you can undo about
that.
We had
a client that he spent 3 days too much in the UK and it cost him £20,000 in tax.
It is
really important to understand how it works.
Tip.
High level view, I quite like the approach we take in our internal, you can go and get RDR3, as it's called, and you can go and look at them. They've now moved it into the manual or something.
Yeah.
It's 125 pages-ish, I think, RDR3.
Yeah.
With a load of examples.
Yeah.
Like loads of examples.
Yeah.
And everyone in the examples have got really odd names. They're not like called Bob or Steve or something. But anyway, that's just...
Could be coming into the UK.
Well, it can be, yes. From the Congo or somewhere.
Yeah.
I guess we've condensed it down into our like flowchart, which isn't necessarily the way you would look at it if you go through RDR3.
Yeah.
But I think it's quite a nice way of giving that high-level view of how it works. So
yeah.
Do you want to just talk about our arriver flowchart and our leaver flowchart?
So there's, as you say, flowchart type system. There's two different paths you could take depending on whether you've been a UK tax resident in one or more of the previous three tax years.
So you're already getting into the detail there, one or more or?
Prior to the tax year being considered. So if you have been a UK tax resident in one of the previous three tax years, then you would be considered a leaver from HMRC's perspective. If you haven't been a UK tax resident in the previous three tax years, you would be considered an arriver. And there's a couple of different changes, both in some of the automatic overseas tests and in the sufficient ties test, that means you basically get a bit more wiggle room from HMRC's perspective.
If you're coming in.
If you're coming into the UK.
That's a key point, isn't it? So I always think of it high level. HMRC are obviously in the market for making it hard to leave and easy to arrive.
Yeah.
But at the same time, on the way in, there is, like, if you're arriving, there is that element of, like, to your point about difference in tests. If I'm leaving and I want to be non-resident, I can only, like, 15-day concept. Whereas if I'm coming in, it's 45 days. So that's the sort of illustration of where they do look at the two things as being whatever the opposite of balanced is.
Balanced?
Yeah. So, well, it's not... equal. So there is that sort of directional flow to it. And we also see that when, and we're not going to go into this, a topic for another day, is split years.
Yeah.
But it's the same there. It's coming in, there are lots more ways in which they'll say, oh, you've become tax resident than if you're going out.
Yes. Yes.
So you mentioned there about automatic tests.
Yep.
High level, what are they?
So depending on which way you're going through it, you've got two automatic overseas tests, which are considered first in general, for being automatically non-resident in the UK. The first is your day test, which, as you mentioned, 15 midnights, 45 midnights, depending on whether you're leaver or arriver. The next one is your full-time work outside of the UK, which is pretty detailed, and I won't go into the detail, but fundamentally, you've got to be working full-time outside of the UK for the whole of the tax year.
I think on that one, that's an often one that's used, because a lot of the people we help are, I've been offered a job overseas.
Yeah.
The way I always try and look at it is to say, in the majority of cases, people who are being relocated by an employer, they're going to be working every hour God sends.
Yeah.
And the very high likelihood is that you will meet the test. And I often say to people, look, I wouldn't worry too much about it. You're almost certainly going to meet the test. But it's, again, important to stress that this is really nauseatingly detailed.
Yes.
And you just need to be a bit careful and at least understand how the tests work if you are going somewhere, because it's good to have that in the back of your mind.
Especially because when we do have people who are going outside of the UK for work purposes, they don't always take their families with them. And what we sometimes see in instances where people will up and take everybody with them, you know, if they do spend a bit too much time in the UK for the statutory residence test, there's potentially double tax treaty relief that could be applied to give the same or similar sort of outcome for them. Whereas if somebody is kind of keeping their home and their family in the UK, quite often you would find that treaty relief wouldn't necessarily apply. And so the statutory residence test becomes kind of of utmost importance.
It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, one of the good things is that where people are doing almost that sort of arbitrage between, I'm going to go and be non-resident because I'm working in Saudi Arabia or something.
Yeah.
And my family are staying back behind. Fortunately, a lot of people realise that there's detail that they need to understand.
Yes.
And then again, fortunately, if people just up sticks and leave and don't really think about it, but they take everyone with them, the probability is that they're going to be in a better situation.
And then the difficulty, I just say that, certainly before COVID, that was the big one that we used to see in terms of leaving family behind if people were going off to the Middle East. I suppose the big thing is, if you're going to somewhere like, I don't know, Germany or Canada, tax rates are similar, if not a bit higher than in the UK.
The problem is when you're going somewhere where there's no tax.
If you're going somewhere where there's no tax, the implications of remaining UK tax resident are pretty substantial.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the other thing on the work side of things, and having been through this myself, when you're employed, it's always a little bit easier.
Yeah.
You can get more complicated when you're self-employed. And like now with people becoming more nomadic in terms of I've just got my laptop and an internet connection, I'm fine. That can also make it a little bit difficult. Another classic one I've had recently is a client who's a musician, and the work test, it's sort of fine if you're working in a building and you've got data of when you clocked in, clocked out. But like if you're a musician and you're practicing, by nature, you're going to be practicing in a room on your own.
Yeah.
What do you do? And like one of his questions was like, should I be like recording my practice sessions? I was like, you're going to have a massive library of tapes to cover it. But just to highlight to people, with all of this stuff, the thing to bear in mind at a high level is HMRC might come asking. Make sure you know what you've been doing, how you've been doing it.
Real-time records.
There are apps and that sort of thing these days that you can get that will track your days and use the geolocators and all that sort of thing. And I guess the other thing, and this is a shameless plug for our business, is a lot of our clients like a rapport detailing what they're doing, because ultimately, and I think this is actually genuinely true, if HMRC come asking and they're like, this is the advice I got, here's a 10-page document explaining exactly what I could and couldn't do, and I followed it. HMRC can still ask as many questions as they want, but I just always feel that they're going to look at that and go, they took advice, they probably got it right. Are we going to spend huge amounts of man hours digging into this? Now, for some people, if it's millions and millions of quid of tax that the UK may have lost out of, then potentially.
Yes, they probably are.
Yeah, but you sort of feel that that's a helpful way of doing it.
Yes.
So they're the automatic tests from an overseas perspective. Then there's the UK ones.
Yes, so there are three automatic UK tests. I mean, the first one is one that most people are aware of, which is just if you're in the UK for 183 days or more, so 6 months, more than 6 months, then you're going to be resident. And the main reason most people are aware of that is because that generally will apply in most countries if you're in a particular country for more than 6 months.
Standard approach.
I mean, I suppose there are particular nuances per country, but that's usually a set in stone type one. You've also got having your only home in the UK and full-time work inside of the UK. Again, these are pretty detailed, but I suppose the primary objective for those two, I would say, are designed to catch people who are either leaving the UK during the tax year or arriving in the UK during the tax year, because for only home in the UK, that can affect you after like 30 days into the tax year. And full-time work inside of the UK, you only need to do it for one day during the tax year to be caught by it and be effectively UK tax resident for the whole year.
And that I always think that the only home test is also a bit... It's interesting when you think that came in 2013 and it's only really started to bite in some ways now with this whole idea of digital nomadity. Is that a word? I'm not sure.
We'll go with it.
And... it's interesting that it does make it problematic for people who think that they could break tax residence by not actually going and moving somewhere else, but like just not being in the UK as a permanent holiday type approach. Mm. So that's the automatic test. Then we get down to...
sufficient tithe.
Yes, the sort of classic one, which often people seem to... quite often we have a thing, don't we, where people go, I understand the 182 days thing, and if I'm in for 183 days, I'm a tax resident. And then it's the sufficient tithe test. And then that's how I know.
Yes.
And they often miss out on the other automatic test.
Right? Yes.
But coming to the sufficient tithe tests.
Yep. High level, there's five tithes. So you've got family, accommodation, work, 90 day, and country. The country tithe knocked off if you're an arriver.
Yes. And that country one is just about, again, it sort of plays to that digital nomad thing of like, if you have as many days in the UK or more days in the UK than you have anywhere else, or equal, I think it is, isn't it?
Yeah.
Then that would give you a tie.
Yes.
It's probably worth explaining what the sort of concept behind the ties test is.
So the idea is the more ties you have to the UK, the fewer days you can spend in the UK before you become a UK tax resident. So if you've got 4 or 5 ties to the UK, then you can only spend 15 midnights in the UK without being considered UK tax resident, which takes you back up to the first automatic overseas test. Whereas if you've only got if you've got no ties to the UK, you can spend up to 182.
Yeah.
But the challenge that you then have is if you wanted to do the 182 days in the UK, then that's great. But you've got to go really careful.
But it would then give you a tie, wouldn't it?
It would give you a tie for the next year, yeah. Yes.
But I suppose the thing is that I think I'm right in saying that if you've never been in the UK before, so if you're an arriver,
yeah,
you can have one tie and do up to 182 days.
Yes.
Which then means you could, as long as your tie was only ever the 90-day tie,
yeah,
you could do it. But then it's like...
But then where were you going to have an accommodation tie? Yeah.
Yes, I remember there was controversy around it with, I think it was Sean Connery, where people were having a go about the fact that he was, I don't know, grumbling about Scottish independence or something, and everyone was like, well, he's never in the UK, he only ever spends 182 days here. And it's one of those classic ones where it's like, actually, that wouldn't work in his particular situation.
Yeah.
But again, it goes to show that the design of it, right, is you can't, and it is quite clever in that sense, because you can't manipulate it in the way that some people think you can, because there are these little bits in it that make it, as you say, it's that whole thing of like, are you ever going to be in the UK for 182 days and not have an accommodation tie? Feels pretty unlikely.
Yeah.
Or if you do, it will be a bit of a pain in the neck to try and figure it out, move around, have gaps, all this sort of stuff, right?
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. But then equally and vice versa, we sometimes get people who are like, I want to remain UK tax resident, but I don't want to spend any time in the UK. And for them, it's like trying to explain that the statutory residence test is black and white, and it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter that you just want to say you're resident. That you either are or you are.
Yeah, by and that covers off on that point that some people often get a bit confused about. Well, if I'm tax resident in the UK, I can't be tax resident elsewhere. I was having a conversation with someone yesterday, and it's like, no, but you can be tax resident in lots of places all at the same time.
And I think where that sometimes gets a bit confusing is some countries, for example, will either see you as resident, if you're resident by means of a double tax treaty or just domestically resident, or non-resident. They don't kind of give you that nuance. Whereas in the UK, you can have a situation where you're considered to be UK tax non-resident, you can be considered to be tax resident, but you could also be considered to be tax resident in the UK by means of the statutory residence test, but treaty resident in another country.
And that sometimes blows people's heads off.
Yes.
Because then another client to me today is like, I'm thinking that I might need to be tax resident in the UK and treaty resident in Canada. And it's like, not a choice. I mean, it is based on the facts and the situation.
It is.
And funnily enough, people do get quite worried about it, which makes sense. But I'm always at pains to say, let's just go down the flowchart and find out.
Yes. But then equally, whilst the statutory residence test is great and helps you to determine, I mean, obviously, if you're non-resident, then that's great and things are a bit simpler. But if, for example, you're trying to be a UK tax resident, just because you're a UK tax resident, what means the statutory residence test isn't necessarily the end of the story.
I guess the final point, just as we wrap up, is just to mention the fact that a lot of countries, you either are resident or you're not resident. And there's no concept of this idea of being able to have part of the year as a resident and part of it as a non-resident. But we have a split year concept.
Yes. So have it both on the way out of the UK and on the way into the UK, where effectively the year is split into two, where even though you're technically UK tax resident for the whole period, you can break it up so that for part of the year you're UK tax resident and part of the year you're considered and treated as a UK tax non-resident. On the way out of the UK, it's a bit more tricky to do
so. It's the thing, isn't it? Like, we're going to make it hard to leave, easy to come.
Yeah. So it's usually associated with working full time or partner of somebody working full time outside of the UK or ceasing to have a home in the UK. On the way into the UK, you've got two tests that are related to having a home or having your only home in the UK. Two tests associated with ceasing full-time work outside of the UK or being the partner of somebody ceasing full-time work outside of the UK, And then the final one is starting full-time work inside of the UK. So yeah, again, lots of complexity. I don't know why I'm crying about that as if it's an issue.
It's I think the takeaway is hopefully that's given people a sort of high level overview of how it works. The takeaway is anything, it's very complicated.
Yeah.
Do get in touch with us. One of the things that we can't stress enough is if you're coming in, you need to have a conversation before you leave or before you come in.
Yeah.
So you know what to do, because it can be so difficult to explain to people. If you've only spoken to us 6 months ago, we could have told you not to do X, Y, Z, and that would have saved you a lot of tax. Do get in touch if you've got these issues. We do more residency work than probably anything else.
Yeah.
And it really does make a difference. So I hope you've enjoyed it. I hope that podcast has been informative. As I say, get in touch. Every situation is different. And we can certainly help. Thanks for watching. If you like our podcast, please do subscribe to it. And if you've got any things you'd like us to cover, please do the email podcast@lsrpartners.com and we'll see what we can do. Thanks for joining us. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Tax Compass podcast brought to you by LSR Partners, where we help you pay the right tax in the right place at the right time. Book a call with us. Details are in the show notes.